Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome back to the Devil's Cage. I am Blaine Ferguson alongside Ryan Bafalukas. Ryan, how does it feel to be back?
You know what? It feels really good to be back.
This is like the third show that you've like been welcomed back to. You know what I mean?
You know what? It's always a pleasure.
You're on so many like podcasts and shows and writing. It's like I feel like this whole year, like there's been four episodes where I've heard, welcome back. Like
I feel, you know what? I'm a busy man.
You are a busy man.
I do a lot of different stuff. I do some stuff on the ASU campus radio, but this is my first love, man.
This is your first Devil's Cage with me.
Doing the Devil's Cage. Blaine Ferguson, Ryan Bafalukas. Blaine, how was your summer?
It was good. It was good. I spent the summer shepherding young children.
Yeah, you're the camp counselor. I worked at Big Five Sporting Goods. Nothing too exciting about that. I actually cut my face open trying to grab a shoebox. That was probably the highlight of my summer. Which was good.
Hey, you know what? To each his own. Anyways, we're going to get right into it.
We're not going to waste time.
This is a new revamped Devil's Cage. It's efficient. It's going to be fantastic.
What is it?
It's efficient. It's going to be fantastic. Anyways, UFC 152 this weekend on pay-per-view. Ryan, are you looking forward to this card? Or what's your opinion on this card?
You know, this card, the top three fights are stacked. You've got two title fights. Obviously, John Jones, Vitor Belfort. John Jones getting moved from UFC 151 facing Vitor Belfort. And I think you kind of have said it best over the past couple of weeks. It's almost a Rocky story.
It absolutely is, I think.
It's just Vitor comes from nowhere. We know Jones turned the fight down with Chael. He got moved to 152 against Machida. Machida's camp turned the fight down to the shock of everybody. And then out of nowhere comes...
I remember that day long where we were following what was happening with UFC 151.
And it was insane.
We literally like screamed into each other's apartment rooms four times that day just saying the updates like, Chael's fighting Jones!
No, he's not.
Machida's fighting Jones. No, he's not. Now Belfort is fighting him. Yeah, that was a crazy day. But I mean, Vitor Belfort. I mean, you can say it's a Rocky story. You can say it's. He's a severe underdog in this fight. But honestly, he's been successful throughout his UFC career. Minus a kick to the face by Anderson Silva, he's had potentially a Hall of Fame UFC career. Winning the UFC heavyweight tournament in its very beginning stages at UFC 12, and then also winning the light heavyweight championship.
Yeah, Vitor, he's won seven of the last eight fights. His only loss coming at UFC 126 when he got kicked in the face by Anderson Silva, which is absolutely brutal.
He put him on a video game cover, not in the right way.
Yeah. On the cover of the UFC game, it's just his cheek is just
it's
like...
It's just rippling.
It's just an incredible shot.
Honestly, I've watched training videos of him today. Rashad Evans is his head coach. You could be a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about Rashad Evans.
Well,
I understand.
Here's the thing. It's better than having a coach who has no idea what he's going up against.
Perhaps nobody knows Jones better than Rashad Evans. Not only did he train with him, but he spent 25 minutes in the cage with him.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's more of a positive than a negative for sure. To have Rashad at least in your camp, and also training with the Black Zillions in Boca Raton, Florida. Alistair Overeem's down there. They got a stellar camp down there in Florida. I think Vitor's gonna maybe surprise some people. We'll see. Anyways, we're gonna start with the first fight in the pay per view, a featherweight matchup between Cub Swanson and Charles Oliveira. Cub Swanson, I mean, they're both riding win streaks in the featherweight division. Charles Oliveira was in the lightweight division, had some tough competition. He came out and took the UFC by storm with a submission of the night performance in his first fight. And then, kind of got awoken up. I mean, his dream was awakened by Jim Miller when Jim Miller pretty much controlled him.
Yeah, then he lost his submission by submission to Jim Miller.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Oliveira, he drops down to 145, puts on this crazy submission that's he bends the guy's leg backwards, and they call it a calf slicer. I had never seen it done in the UFC before, and I believe he took home submission of the night honors for that one. But then Cub Swanson comes in off a pretty vicious knockout over Ross Pearson, and another knockout. The name's escaping me. Who he also knocked out?
He knocked out George Roop.
George Roop, yeah, that's
UFC
right.
UFC on Fox, Evans Davis.
And then he got knocked out of the night against against Ross Pearson. But so they're both coming in on win streaks. Both have a lot to gain from this fight. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, it's the prototypical just striker versus submission artist. Charles Oliveira, as you said, some of the sickest and slickest submissions in the UFC. Definitely probably the best submissions in the featherweight division.
Definitely.
And Cub Swanson's a guy that likes to bang. He likes to stand up. He got knocked out of the night against Ross Pearson. It's going to be who can impose their will more. Can Cub Swanson keep the fight standing where he's more comfortable, or can Charles Oliveira get the fight to the ground and definitely try to put Cub Swanson either to sleep, make him really uncomfortable? And I'm going to pick Charles Oliveira by...
I think in our pick for... the Walter Cronkite Sports website, you had Oliveira by submission in the second.
Yes.
Are you gonna keep it the second?
I'm gonna go third.
Third. Okay. Well, I'm gonna differ with you on that one. I think Swanson's gonna catch him in the second. And,
wow. You were very pro Oliveira this week. I'm surprised.
I think Oliveira is very, very good, but then I watched some of Swanson, and Swanson is vicious. I think he's gonna catch Oliveira, and end it in the second round via ref stoppage TKO.
All right, our next fight is in the light heavyweight division. Matt Hamill comes out of retirement. Matt the Hammer Hamill, if you don't know, Mr. Hamill is deaf, obviously. He's a great story, tremendous inspiration.
Made a movie about it.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the movie, but I've heard it.
If you're not a Matt Hamill fan, you're absolutely insane for what this
guy's story is incredible.
For what this guy has overcome in life, for him to be that good. I mean, he fought Quentin Rampage Jackson. He, you know, headlined the card UFC 130, and then Jackson went on to get a title shot. So
yeah.
He's been at the top of the light heavyweight division. He was supposed to fight Vladimir Matyushenko in his return fight.
Well, first it was supposed to be Hollett. Hollett dropped out. Matyushenko came in. Matyushenko also dropped out, and then Hollett, from what I heard, Hollett then came out and back. He came back.
Yeah. So now
he's
facing...
it's been a crazy mix up, but now it's for sure. Or I mean, you never want to knock
exactly.
on wood. You never want to say any fights
exactly.
for sure anymore in the UFC. Roger Hollett this Saturday.
Yeah, Roger Hollett's 13-3. He's got 4 wins by knockout. He's kind of a submission specialist. He's got 7 wins by submission, 2 wins by decision. He's making his UFC debut. His last fight was a split decision victory, November of 2011, against John Hawk, and that was in the Bellator
Fighting
Championship.
Season 5 Bellator. This guy, his nickname's the Hulk for a reason. He looks like a little tank. The guy is stacked, and I'm gonna go with him by submission. I don't know what round, but I think he's gonna catch Hamill on the ground. I think Hamill's. I mean, they both obviously are gonna come in with a little bit of ring rust.
Yeah,
but I think. I mean, I usually, for some reason, I like people when they're UFC debuts. For some reason, I think people come in wanting to show. I'm pretty favorable of people making their debuts.
Yeah, I'm not. I think Hollett's going to get beat by decision. I look at Matt Hamill's last 6 or 7 opponents. I see Alexander Gustafsson, the new crown jewel of the light heavyweight division. You know, everyone's favorite, prospect.
Up and comer.
Quentin Rampage Jackson. He fought Tito Ortiz, John Jones.
He
actually has a defeat.
He has the only defeat over John Jones because he took elbows.
The only victory over
well.
John Jones. And then he has a win over Mark Munoz. He got knocked out of the night.
Yeah, he kicked the crap out of Mark Munoz.
So I think Hamill is going to come back triumphant, and I
would love nothing more than to see Matt Hamill back and win.
I think that sometimes when fighters are making their UFC debut, they come out maybe a little timid, a little afraid to take chances. Hector Lombard at UFC 149.
But then I'll counter with Glover Teixeira coming in against Kyle Kingsbury, and then also I can't pronounce his last name for the life of me. Sayar. Don't even try. Okay. Sayar came in and destroyed his first opponent. People do come into the UFC sometimes and absolutely annihilate their first opponent, and people are like, whoa, where did this guy come from?
Yeah, exactly. Plus, so, Hollett is in his home country. He's a Canadian fight in Toronto, so he's got the home crowd advantage there.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm really excited to see Hamill come back.
I am too.
See what happens.
I am too. I'm a fan.
Okay, the next fight, a middleweight clash. Michael Bisping versus Brian Stann. This one could be really exciting. This one could have some fireworks.
This is your prototypical good guy versus bad guy. You have Brian Stann, who's probably the most beloved fighter in the UFC in terms of just a guy's a former Marine, great guy.
He's an All-American. He's a great guy.
Against Alessio
Sakara,
a fight that he was pounding Sakara, and he ended up restraining himself because he knew Sakara was out.
Sakara was out cold.
He had to stop the fight. The referee didn't stop the fight. Just that kind of gentleman, and people love Brian Stann.
No, yeah, he's 100% class.
If you've ever seen his the kind of the shows that they did on Fuel about him in the military, kind of the segments they did, absolutely must watch TV. And he's fighting Michael Bisping, who's one of the most hated fighters, at least on American soil.
Oh yeah, People can't stand him. And it really got bad on The Ultimate Fighter, but then it peaked when he, against Jorge Rivera, when there was that incident about the illegal knee, and then he apparently spit in the corner of Rivera. And so people are not a fan of Bisping. Bisping runs his mouth a lot, and people tend to not like that here. Well, never mind. I won't say that. It depends how you run your mouth.
No, that's true. I mean, Floyd Mayweather's pretty much beloved by a lot.
Chael Sonnen.
Chael Sonnen, exactly. I know we're both big Chael Sonnen fans, but...
Guilty.
I don't despise Michael Bisping. I respect him a lot as a fighter.
I think he's very talented. He's very technical.
He is very talented. Sound. And that's why I'm picking him to get the unanimous decision victory over the All-American Brian Stann. Even though it hurts me to pick Brian Stann. To pick against Brian Stann.
I'm going with Stann by TKO in the third. I think... I've never been impressed by – the one thing I have never been impressed by with Bisping is his power.
Or his stamina, for that matter,
Or his stamina. I mean, I think he got kind of lucky against Mayhem Miller, that Mayhem Miller showed up in even worse shape than he showed up in. You know, I think that was a battle of we're both out of shape. They're both dead by the second round. Miller just was 10 times more gas than Bisping was. Bisping has also been called pillow hands in the past.
Bisping definitely does not have knockout
power.
He doesn't really
swing to knock people out, but he does. I mean, the flurries he can put on, the counters he has, they could drop people. I mean, with 4 ounce gloves, you can get knocked out
any day.
So, but anyways, I'm gonna pick Brian Stann. I think Brian Stann has the knockout power to get the job done.
All right, our next fight, the co-main event of the evening. It was the main event, and then it got moved to the co-main event status. It is the inaugural flyweight championship fight, Joseph Benavidez and Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. I'm very excited for this fight. I know the flyweights have been nothing short of very entertaining, very impressive from my point of view. Yeah, there was on the UFC on FX2, there was some controversy with the scoring. Is that what you're talking about?
Okay. Yeah, I was talking about the first McCall versus Johnson.
Yeah, the flyweight division is also very, very shallow. So I definitely think these are the two clear cut best flyweights in the world. And I think whoever wins this fight could hold on to his title for quite a long time because I don't see the depth in the flyweight division.
I mean, besides
yet.
You could. I mean, I'm a fan, but you can put Ian McCall in the top three. So because I mean, a lot of people, me included, thought McCall won the first fight, and Johnson, I mean, ended up being scored a draw, so they fought to the second. Johnson won by decision.
Yeah.
Both were incredibly entertaining fights.
Ian McCall's right there.
Yeah, those guys both put on a show. Joseph Benavidez, his first fight, he comes in and absolutely knocks out Yoshiro Urushitani.
That was a good effort.
Thank you. He clocked him. And so Benavidez looks like he has some power. I'm going to go with Benavidez by knockout in the second.
I'm going to pick Benavidez as well. I'm going to pick Benavidez by unanimous decision. I'll go a step further and say this gets fight of the night.
Really?
Yeah.
After we finish the championship fight, we can both go through fight of the night, knockout of the night, submission of the night. You want to introduce the main event?
The main event. We've touched on it a little bit in the opening. John Bones Jones, who has had a tumultuous summer, to say the least. He's definitely had a worse summer than me.
It's been a bad year.
I mean, 2011 he had probably the best year any mixed martial artist has ever had.
And then
it started with kind of the lackluster performance against Evans. Not saying it was terrible.
But you could point the start at that.
And then he had the DUI where he wrapped his Bentley around a tree. And then the whole debacle with UFC 151, where if you've been living under a rock for the past couple months, Dan Henderson got hurt, and Jon Jones was asked to fight Chael Sonnen on 9 days' notice. And the UFC came to him and said, if you don't take this fight, there's no one else. Everyone else has pretty much declined. If you don't take this fight, we're going to cancel the event, lose millions of dollars. And he knowingly, he declined the fight with Chael Sonnen. And so UFC 151, which we were going to go to.
Yeah.
I was scheduled to cover that event on Press Row.
Yeah, you were on Press Row. I had tickets purchased. It was going to be our first UFC live event. We could rant about it.
No, I mean, it's in the past. I was just kind of building it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so now, again, we kind of went over where it was supposed to be Jones Machida, because Machida, with his win on UFC on Fox 4, won the next contender status. And Machida turned the fight down, and it goes to one of his Brazilian brothers.
Can we talk about, before we say anything, Anderson Silva, I love the story that Anderson Silva called Dana White and was like, hey, I will fight on UFC 151. After it had already been canceled, he was like, hey, I'll fight. I'll save the card.
Yeah. Didn't have to be a title fight. Just I'll fight anyone, light, heavy, middle.
What a company guy. You know, those are the people you want fighting in your company.
And Dana actually ended up taking that phone call for 153.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
After Aldo and Coke had to get rescheduled, he's fighting Stephen Bonner.
Yeah, we'll call up Anderson. So Jon Jones' opponent.
All right, Blaine, I want to ask you, how does Vitor Belfort win this fight?
He swarms him. I think that's what he does. He counters Jones, and once he has Jones, he doesn't relent. If he counters Jones and lands a shot, he's got to swarm him, because if you've looked up Vitor Belfort highlights or ever seen Vitor fight, once he has you hurt, he finishes you, period. Like, he has lightning hands, and he also has a really strong jiu-jitsu background. And you can see in training videos, 185, he looks, I mean, you can tell he looks a little bit smaller. In the training videos that have him, I'm sure a little bit above 205.
He's huge.
He looks like a monster, which, I mean, you could say, well, hopefully he doesn't come in overweight. I don't think that'll be a problem. He's I've never heard of him missing weight, but he wins by countering Jones and swarming on him and not letting Jones recover.
I definitely agree. I think Belfort just has to go in there knowing he's got nothing to lose and just attack. What we saw with Rashad Evans, he was so hesitant. He didn't want to get caught by Jones. He didn't throw. He wasn't active enough.
He ended up getting decisioned. Rashad did land a couple of shots. Not really flush. But I mean, when he did swing, he pointed out that Jones can be touched.
Oh yeah, Lyoto Machida, I think, was the first one to say Jones can be touched.
Yeah, look at this left hand. I'll counter it with you. So I
totally agree. I think Vitor, he's got to swarm him. He's got to go in there with nothing to lose, and he's got to look for the finish. And I don't think he'll be able. I don't think he's going to get Jones to the ground. No one's been able to.
I don't think he wants to, though, necessarily.
I know his last victory over Anthony Johnson was via a rear naked choke.
But that was after he hurt Johnson.
Yeah, after he hurt him. He's got knockouts over Naka wins over Rich Franklin, Yoshihiro Akiyama, Matt Lindland. Vitor's got the power. And again, it's like what you said earlier, one punch in those 4 ounce gloves and Jones is going to sleep. The problem is Vitor's gotta close the distance.
Exactly.
Vitor's gotta close the distance on a guy that will probably outreach him by about 6 to 8 inches.
I think another thing that Vitor's got going for him is that he is that veteran. He's fought in Anderson Silva, although he got knocked out by Anderson Silva. I don't think he has anything to lose. I think he's going in there. He has nothing to lose, everything to gain, and I don't think he's intimidated. I mean, if you've heard him talk, he's not impressed. He's not intimidated by John Jones.
And honestly, Vitor has nothing to lose. Vitor took this fight on it seems like 3 weeks' notice.
Yep.
I mean, he's got absolutely nothing to lose. This is his first light heavyweight fight in quite a bit.
He was on a 2-fight win streak in middleweight after Anderson Silva.
Yeah, was on a 2-fight winning streak. He's the former UFC light heavyweight champion of the world. He's the former UFC heavyweight tournament winner. The guy's credentials speak for themselves.
I mean, he might end up being a UFC Hall of Famer one day.
I definitely think he might be. And it's a big fight for Jones. It's going to be interesting to see how he comes out. I'm interested in how his reception
is.
Okay,
these two fight 10 times. How many times does Vitor win?
Maybe one.
One, you think?
Maybe two max.
Okay, yeah, I would agree.
I mean,
More and more I think about it, the more and more I think Vitor has a chance to at least take it to the distance.
I only think he takes it to the distance if he does what Rashad does and not really try to engage that much.
Yeah.
I think if he engages, Jones is a good enough athlete to where he's going to catch him. He's going to find a mistake. He's going to use his physicalness to outpower Vitor.
Mm-hmm, possibly.
And that's
just, he's got to stay out
of the, Vitor, no one's been able to get within the reach of Jones. Machida did it once.
Stay out of the clinch too.
Exactly. And those sharp, short elbows that Jones loves. So it's a tall order. I mean, we're trying to think of how do you beat John
Jones? Exactly. We don't know.
It's so difficult. At least Chael Sonnen at UFC 117 maybe kind of gave us a blueprint to how to beat Anderson Silva. Put him on his back and punch him in the face for 25 minutes. No one's been able to do that to John Jones.
No.
No one has been able to get him to the ground. No one's been able to keep him to the ground.
The only hole I can think of is that he leaves himself open sometimes for counters, but
yeah.
Machida showed that once.
You got to get there first. You have to get inside his reach to counter him, and it's difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not easy at all. So do you want to do our picks? I also want to talk about...
We're both going Jones, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go Jones. I think I said Jones by third round knockout. Second round knockout. Okay, I'll stay second round knockout.
Okay, I pushed it to third. I had Jones by TK on the third. I think he gets Vitor down to the ground and ends it on the ground. Vitor, I think, will put on an impressive performance, at least in the first two rounds. I think Dana will be happy with Vitor's performance, and we'll see where Vitor goes from there.
Okay, I want to ask you a couple questions, maybe not so related to the actual fight itself. How do you think Jones gets perceived in Canada?
I don't think his image will be fixed with this one fight. I think it's going to take a lot for his image to be fixed. I think it's going to take for him to lose for his image to be fixed.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot. I remember when GSP was coming up, a lot of people didn't like GSP. A lot of people thought he's arrogant. He's cocky. He thinks he, you know, should be have this title shot handed to him. I'm not saying Jones thought the title should be handed to him, but a lot of people compare GSP's rise or Jones's rise to GSP's rise is that GSP came up and was this young, brash, very talented fighter. In steps Matt Serra, ultimate underdog. Matt Serra knocks GSP out. GSP comes back, wins several fights in a row, gets his title back. Everybody loves GSP now. GSP is one of the top five most beloved fighters in the UFC right now. I mean, besides his, I think without his injury, he would still be number two on the pound-for-pound list.
Yeah.
I think that's the only thing keeping him off.
We just haven't seen him fight in over 12 months. Actually, longer than that.
And so I think for Jones to rebuild his image, he has to be humbled. I don't know other way. I don't think you can hire all the publicists in the world. You can hire all the PR people in the world. people are still going to remember UFC 151. People are still going to know about the DUI and wrecking his Bentley. And people just, for some reason, people, I mean, that's what comes with success almost, is that people just don't like Jones anymore.
Exactly. Jones has become the fighter that you love to hate and you love to root against. I know that we've talked on this show.
Which is weird, because I think this is one of the, besides Brock Lesnar, I can't think of another superstar in the UFC that people just want to see lose so much.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, when we would do this show and us talking even, you know, off the air, we kept saying, I would love to be wrong, but I'm picking Jones. Nothing would make me as happy as to see John Jones lose. Nothing would make me happier than to see John Jones lose. It just hasn't happened yet. And mm-hmm. I do think it's incredible how over the past less than 12 months, John Jones has gone from an absolute bona fide superstar, the next superstar of the sport that can carry the sport past, you know, boundaries that it's ever seen, mm-hmm. in terms of just pay-per-view numbers, in terms of, you know, he's got the deal with Nike now. He's got the global deal with Nike. No.
Which Anderson Silva just recently got,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. But John Jones was the first to have a global deal with Nike. And all of a sudden now, I know most hardcore MMA fans are not Jones fans anymore.
And it seems like a lot of fighters aren't. I mean, besides fighters who are friends with John, it seems like the majority of fighters, at least from what we hear on Twitter and in interviews, aren't fans of Jones either.
Yeah, there were some fighters that came to Jones's defense. Ben Henderson,
right here in Glendale. I forgot. Ian McCall said something about it that he understood. I believe. I think it was along the lines of that Ian McCall understood.
Yeah, but obviously the fighters that were supposed to fight on 151, it, you know, created a huge controversy because they're talking about, well, I can't pay my mortgage, I can't pay my electric bill, my family has to eat. So they're obviously not fans of him, and that sparked more negative publicity mm-hmm. towards him. You know, that got published on MMA websites, which MMA fans read. Makes you feel sorry for the guys. So real quick, I want to get your take on the Count Michael Bisping. We talked about how he likes to open his mouth. He said at the press conference for 152 back in July, he said that his fight against Mike Brian Stan should be the main event because it's a bigger fight than the inaugural flyweight championship. This was before the whole Jones Vitor mm-hmm. thing, so it was originally the card was supposed to be Demetrius Johnson and Joseph Benavidez.
I think it's ridiculous for him to say that.
Yeah,
I think. Look, this fight still might even be a contender fight. You mean, you have no idea what's going to happen after this.
Winner has to go through Weidman, probably.
Winner probably has to go through Weidman. And so, this is not necessarily a contender fight.
I laugh because Joseph Benavidez responded in a UFC 152 fighter diary. He said that, quote, Uriah Faber asked him if he feels he hit harder than Michael Bisping, and Benavidez answered, quote, yes, I hit harder than Bisping, which maybe some people will even try to argue that.
Pound for pound, he might hit harder than Bisping. And
because Bisping is definitely not known for his knockout power.
Benavidez can put people away, and Bisping hasn't necessarily had a strong finish in a long time. I don't even remember the last strong finish he had. I don't remember the last time I was impressed by a Bisping performance.
All right, last thing I just want to get your opinion on. John Fitch came out, and we talked about this a little earlier in the week. He said, I have to be a better showman to get a title shot. He said, there's no system. Okay, this is a quote from MMAmania.com. It says, quote, it's impossible to tell. There's no system for picking number one contenders. There's no order. There's no lineup. There's no point system. It's just whoever they feel they're going to make the most money off of. That's who gets the title shot, end quote. What are your thoughts on that? Because I think part of it, the UFC, part of that has to be true because you look at what they did on UFC on Fox 4. They had four light heavyweights. They said whoever wins the most impressively gets the title shot.
Well, I mean, the tournament theory, the tournament format is so good in theory. You say you square all these people off, winner gets contendership. But with injuries now and all these fighters dropping off cards, it's nearly impossible to do. Bellator manages to do it, but even Bellator has fighters drop out.
And
now.
This has been a rough summer.
It's been a rough year. Yeah, definitely one of the worst years the UFC has had in regards to pay-per-views being changed. So as much as I'd like to see, you know, like maybe tournaments be initiated more often, or like a set rank for fighters, it's just not going to work that way. And that's not really how fight contenderships work. Whoever's the most impressive, whoever puts on the show, whoever, you know, dominates their opponent the best, they'll get the title shot.
And also, part of winning impressively is put on a show. That's if you put on a show, you're winning impressively.
And also, those fighters are going to make the most money. No one sits there and say, I mean, maybe besides like hardcore wrestling fans, or you know, Jones's or John Fitch's friends and family say, man, John Fitch is on this pay-per-view. I'm going to buy this pay-per-view. No, they say, oh, Anderson Silva's on this. I'm going to go watch this. Oh, or
Jose Aldo's fighting.
Jose Aldo knocks people out. I want to watch him fight. They don't say, oh, I want to go watch John Fitch lay on somebody for 15 minutes and occasionally throw a punch. That's not what UFC and MMA fans want to see. And that's not who usually gets the contenderships. Now, granted, some people have been able to use the wrestling format to get contenderships, a la Chael Sonnen. Chael Sonnen is
he's a very exciting wrestler, though.
I mean, people like Mark Munoz, who use a wrestling but also throw bombs while they're wrestling. Those are the people that impress, not people who go out there and grab for single and double legs, all day, and then expect to get title shots like John Fitch. So I think John Fitch's argument is not valid here.
All right, is that going to do it for the season debut of the Devil's Cage?
I think that's going to do it.
I guess we'll recap our picks. I'll do them real quick for the main card. Blaine has Cub Swanson. I have Charles Oliveira. Light heavyweight fight. Blaine has Roger Hollett. I have Matt the Hammer Hamill. Blaine has Brian Bisping. Brian Stan. I have Michael Bisping. We both have Joseph Benavidez, and we both have John Jones.
Okay, do you want to do quick knockout of the night?
Oh, knockout of the night. I'm gonna go Jones.
Submission of the night.
Oliveira.
Fight of the night.
Benavidez, Johnson. You?
Okay, knockout of the night. I'm going Stan.
Okay.
Submission of the night. I didn't pick a submission of the night.
It'll probably be a prelim card.
Oh no! I mean, you can say Hollett maybe, or a prelim card. That Hollett's the only submission I picked. And then fight of the night. I'm going Benavidez Johnson.
I think that's going to be a great fight, and that is definitely capable of
Johnson's
a main event.
Demetrius Johnson is a wrestler that puts on exciting fights.
Mm-hmm.
And Mighty Mouse. I mean, he always puts on exciting.
Michael
fights.
Bisping, if you're going to listen to this podcast, that fight is definitely capable of a main event.
You think it's capable of a main event?
Oh, definitely. I think the flyweights are
maybe
very
exciting. I think maybe on an FX or... I don't think for a pay-per-view. I don't think it's pay-per-view main event. Unless one of them is a champion, I don't think...
No. It's the perfect co-main event. It's perfect where it is.
It's a
but I do think it can be a main event.
I think it's talented enough, but I don't think... I think it'd be a good FX or Fuel main event.
I think Fox.
It could be a Fox Co. I'm one of those people who think that Fox fights should be championship. I think main events should be championship.
That is a championship level fight though.
Neither of them are champion.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm saying the flyweight title is a fight that I think you put on Fox because it can broaden the audience.
I think putting it on Fox would have been a great idea, but you never know what is going in the mind of UFC President Dana White and matchmaker Joe Silva. And so that's gonna do it for us here on the Devil Cage. Thanks for tuning in, those who do, and hopefully we'll be back soon with maybe a recap and a UFC 153 preview.
Can't wait.
Gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Tricky pick.